In a world with civil unrest and a global pandemic, there's only one person who can provide the insight and perspective we need.
It's me, Samantha Bee.
Full release with Samantha Bee. All new Tuesdays, streaming on your favorite podcast platform.
What up, everybody? Jacquees here. Now, if you want to listen to Culture Kings without ads and get access to our fire bonus episodes, the only way to do that is by signing up for Stitcher Premium. Here's what you do. Just go to StitcherPremium.com or the Premium tab in your Stitcher app and sign up with the promo code KINGS to get a free month of premium listening. You'll get ad-free listening to Culture Kings and all of your favorite Earwolf and Stitcher shows, plus our exclusive bonus episodes called The Kingdom. And your premium subscription supports us and our show directly. So one more time, that's StitcherPremium.com, promo code KINGS for a free month of premium listening on us. What's up, everybody? Jacquees from Culture Kings here. And I want to talk to the kingdom real quick. Now, in order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are the ones that you guys actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So do us this favor, Culture Kingdom. We need you to go to podsurvey.com/culture-kings and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. That is a tongue twister. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Just remember, terms and conditions do apply. Again, that is podsurvey.com/culture-kinks. Thanks for your help. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Culture Kings, y'all. Today we got a special episode. It's me riding solo for this one. No Edgar on today's episode. We both are gonna, just to let you guys know, in the next upcoming episodes, most of them will still be together, but there are gonna be a couple where he's riding solo, I'm riding solo. Surprisingly, we both are still busy during quarantine. So, don't be alarmed by that. It's nothing too crazy. Just things here and there. But today is a little bit of a special episode. Normally this show is, I don't want to say it's a lighthearted show. We're never scared to talk about whatever we need to talk about. We're never scared to have conversations that need to be heard. And for the most part, it is a comedy podcast. It's a comedy pop culture podcast. But in the culture, as a straight black man, as a cis straight black man, one thing that I lack, I don't want to speak for Edgar, but black men in general lack, is our care for black women. One thing that we lack is standing up for our black women, and especially during the Me Too movement, as we say Black Lives Matter, we can't forget that our, and women in general, I'm not, obviously don't be dumb and think I'm saying anything beyond what I'm saying, but black women matter, and their stories matter. And we need to do a better job in taking care of these women and listening and giving them the platform that we have so often taken away, as we have shoved, unfortunately, our women of color very low on the totem pole when it comes to our change for justice in many facets. So, I am not an interviewer. I don't consider myself an interviewer. I am not an expert at anything, except maybe the OC and Chuck and, wrestling or some, and the Bulls and the Cubs. Those are the only things I'll say I'm an expert at. But I thought it was a good opportunity to have somebody on from an upcoming or a show that's already out, I should say, on HBO Max called On the Record, which is a show or a film on HBO Max about examining the sexual assault allegations against hip hop mogul Russell Simmons. Our guest today is Shanita Hubbard. She was on that actual documentary. She's a very, very great guest. She is a social activist. She knows the hip hop game. I think she is a voice that, you know, among many voices of women of color and black women, especially, that we need to uplift and put at the forefront of this movement that we're having with the Black Lives Matter movement and the Me Too movement within our community and the world as a whole. She's a writer. She's also a speaker. I'm going to let her just have the floor. I'm going to talk to her about the documentary, about her involvement in it, about her work. She's also an author. She has a book called Miseducation, A Women's Guide to Hip Hop. So I'm very excited to talk to her and to let her have the platform and the floor to give to you guys to listen to. So I say let's get right to it. Let's get to Shanita. I hope you guys enjoy. What is up, Shanita? How are you doing today?
I'm good. Today is a better quarantine day. So, well, yeah. Social distancing day, not exactly quarantined anymore, but yeah, today's cool.
Yeah, it's wild because, you know, where are you in LA or are you in?
No, I'm in Pennsylvania now.
Okay. All right. So you're in one of the bigger cities that are affected by, by Rona. Yeah, it's wild because as we are getting to what, month 4 or 5 of this, and places, in my opinion, stupidly started to open up and now are surging again. Mm-hmm. It's weird because we're getting more careful again, but we've also said, well, maybe we can open up our bubbles just a little bit. We're getting used to what we need to do to be safe, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest.
I mean, to protect my mental health, I've had to carefully open up my quarantine bubble a bit.
Yeah.
In terms of people who were also like really social distancing and really strict, you know, you have to open it up a bit because I was like, you know, I can't go crazy in the house by myself.
Yeah, I think you have to. And, you know, at the beginning of quarantine, it was all like, yo, don't bring your breath within 50 yards of me. but now, you know, like you said, for our own sanity, we're opening up our circles and our bubbles safely, you know, and I think that is 100% okay. It's just the people who aren't doing it safely.
Mm-hmm.
They can stay where they at. You know, leave me and my, you know, 2-3 people who I trust alone, you know. awesome for sure. Well, I am very excited to chop it up with you and talk to you. And first, I just, you know, for people who don't know who you are, for people who are going to be introduced to you for the first time listening to this, I would love to just kind of talk about you for a little bit and talk about, you know, you and your voice and your journey before we, you know, jump into On the Record and also your book as well. So, yeah, let's talk about Shanita.
Let's talk about Shanita. Where you want to start?
Oh, man, where we want to start? Where you are? So you're in Pennsylvania. Are you from Pennsylvania?
No. I'm from New York. I moved out here about a couple of years ago because, you know, gentrification is expensive. Right. All that other good stuff. No, it's a lot cheaper out here. So, and I'm close to my mom. So
that's nice.
It was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mom, I'm from Chicago, and I moved out here to LA about 8 years ago, and my mom just moved out here last year, and she was born and raised in Chicago, 50-plus years, and she moved out here, so it's nice. It's nice to have family. It's nice to have your mom close, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you have kids?
I do not have kids. Don't have kids. You know, and probably won't in the immediate future either. How about you?
I have a daughter And okay. It's kind of great having being out here next to my mom. It's also made quarantine a bit interesting because you got to protect yourself and a whole nother other human being and working from home and doing a whole school homeschooling thing. So it's been interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I just kind of looking up like things that you've done and the things that you are doing. I mean, first of all, I know as a black man, as a straight black man, that we fail very often when it comes to bigging up our women of color and our black women's voices in our community. And for whatever reason, you guys still fuck with us. and just do it with such leadership that is sorely needed. It is insane how much black women lead from the front when yes. people don't realize that they are or do. So I would love to just kind of hear your thoughts and your views on how you have, you know, bought your way toward, you know, being a social justice activist, especially in hip hop, which is something that isn't rare. Social activism has always been something in hip hop. Mm-hmm. Social activism for black women has not.
Yes.
And yeah. So I would love to hear your journey on that.
Oh, so yeah. Like you said, hip hop was formed. It was birthed out of the need for social justice and social activism for our community. But what was rare was narrowing that scope a bit more to amplify the very distinct needs of black women, because we live at that intersection of racism and sexism. Right. So, yeah. And sometimes, so while hip hop is a wonderful vehicle for fighting larger issues within our community, sometimes it's still harmful for those of us who also love and champion hip hop, which is black women. And I'm not one of the pioneers, right? There's people before me, like you've seen in a documentary, that thank God there is a Dr. Joan Morgan and a Dream right. Hampton and a Kierna, right? When I was so much younger and kind of still unpacking my own internalized sexism, they were on the front lines, like fighting this battle and carving out paths and made a road and gave me language itself. So this is something that has been going. It's been an uphill battle for a very long time. I'm just really blessed and grateful that I'm not, you know, that I get to follow some trailblazers that you've seen in a documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, listen, speaking of my mom had me when she was 16, single. Mm-hmm. I often say, and this is something that most people say about their moms, that I think she is the strongest person I know. But as I've grown older, outside of just knowing, like, she was a young black woman who had me as a 16-year-old, and I shouldn't be where I am right now, but it's because of her. Mm-hmm. Now I also have the thought process of how hard that is to be a black woman in America and then raise children when we have so much, like, you have to care so much about your own children navigating out there in the world for a world that doesn't care about you, you know.
Yes.
I can't fathom how, I mean, I know how hard it is as a black man. I can't fathom how hard it is as a black mother. How is that navigating not only the world, but, you know, hip hop is big in our community, and mm-hmm. and your daughter is gonna have such a greater, I would assume, because where we are going in our culture, mm-hmm. such a greater appreciation for hip hop, because it's much safer space for women than it ever has been, and will hopefully continue.
Really,
to.
Is it though?
It's not.
I don't know.
It's not, but it's
that it is.
Well,
a safer
yes,
space.
Go ahead. Okay.
I mean, I can't even say it's a safer space. I say that we're having these conversations and it hasn't even been widely accepted and adopted and even supported, right? Because this documentary gotcha. Is out and the survivors still have to fight back. So can we say it's safer, or is the conversation happening on a larger scale? Because they're not necessarily the same things.
Yeah, I think, and you're right. And I think it's the latter for sure. And I think that is, thankfully, since the conversation is happening on a larger scale, a lot of kids now will grow up with that conversation mm-hmm. being had, which I didn't.
Yes.
I can't speak for anybody else, but I didn't have that conversation. I mean, shit, let's be real. I'm 33. Well into my 20s, I would routinely say, well, that's just hip hop, you know? And that sucks. Like, that sucks because it shouldn't be, right? It shouldn't be an expected part of the show. Mm-hmm. It is.
You said a few things I want to touch on. Like, in terms of my daughter, it's interesting because my daughter is 10 and she's about the same age I was when I started to fall in love with hip hop. I may have been about 9 years old, but I was introduced to it through my older brothers who are, you know, super New York hip hop to their heart. So it was their hip hop, right? So that while they had the lexicon and they had the wherewithal, they had the knowledge, my brothers were like, you know, I hate this term, it's so gentrified, just super duper woke, like before that was a term. Like back then it was just like, you know, they got knowledge of self, right? So they introduced me to hip hop and it was able to definitely help me understand how it's such a powerful tool for social activism. But they didn't have the range to talk to me about, you know, women in hip hop and unpacking misogyny, you know, and helping me see me in those lyrics. They helped me to see them in those lyrics, but they simply didn't have the range to do anything else. So the conversations are so naturally different with my daughter. So now she asks questions that, you know, I never even thought to ask about before. Like, she's very specific. Like, she wants to know, like, where are some more of these girl rappers? Like, you know, what are they talking about? Like, she really pushes back in ways that I never even fathomed, right? So the one of your questions was like, what is it to be raising a Black child today? You also said something about your mom. You said she's so strong. I wish we didn't have to be this strong.
Yeah.
Black women don't want to be. I don't want to say we're not strong. We don't want to be seen as strong as the world thinks that we are, because there's a tendency to allow us to do so many things solo. There's a tendency to allow people to say things and not fight with us or for us because people see us as so strong. I can give you a million examples. But as of recently, I was listening to like a piece of this interview with 50 Cent and Lil Wayne, and they're like joking around about laughing and kikiing about how and why they don't date Black women. And it's a big joke and people are laughing. And once that interview came out, the larger conversation around it was like, oh, so who would 50 go up against in a versus, right? That's where the conversation was. Not very few people interjected and jumped in and said, hey, you really just gonna drag Black women just because it's a day ending with the letter Y, right? There wasn't any of that type of support outside of other Black women, right? Because people, we have often seen as, oh, they're so strong. Sometimes people don't fight with and or for us. And it's exhausting. And it may seem like it's something small, but it's just one more thing. So in terms of raising a Black child, I'm super mindful, especially a Black daughter, I'm super mindful to let her know that, you know, it's okay to not be this super strong. Like, we're not going to play into that myth of a super strong, invincible Black woman. We don't do that in my home. I'm very deliberate about not living that life. And I'm very deliberate about, you know, my child not doing that. So I wish we didn't have to be I wish we wasn't seen as invincible, right? And part of the ways that people, I don't know what it would, you know what it would take? I want to see more Black men having these conversations. I really love the way you opened it up and you said, and again, I'm paraphrasing, it's like, pretty much we have to do better by Black women. And that's fantastic, brother. I want you to, that's, you are telling me this, but this is also a very safe space. I want you to have these conversations when Miss Rona leaves and y'all in a barbershop and you're talking to other Black men. Have those conversations there and do that heavy lifting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is the issue that is facing our community of Black men. Is, you know, it's very easy for me to say this here. Is it as easy when, and it should be, and it needs to start being when, like you say, you get to that barbershop and the barbershop talk, and you know, like, oh, the men being men, boys being boys, and which is such a, I am very happy that those notions have started to be pushed back on and rejected, because it is an asset. First, it's toxic.
Yes.
Like, is the first thing. And like you said, and I'm so glad that you said it and reversed my mind process on that. It doesn't allow for us to just be human, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
you know, like it is human to not have to be strong. Mm-hmm. It is human to fail. Yes. It is human to succeed in certain things and not in others. These are all human things that we don't afford, you know, ourselves to have and or others in our community to have, and especially Black women, because like you said, the trope is, man, ain't nobody stronger than a Black woman, right? And I guess, and it's true, right? But there's nobody, but that doesn't mean like, so I'm going to let them go ahead and do
it.
Right, you know, there's nobody stronger than Black people. Yeah, that's great. But, you know, we still out here in these streets fighting every day.
Yes.
So we need something else besides strength, right?
Like, we need something else besides strength. And I want the conversation to move further. Like, just to give you maybe a few talking points in your barbershop talk. One of the things when when Black children are killed, right, we clearly identify, whether it's Tamir Rice, right, or whoever it is, we clearly see them as children, but the media would say Black man. They do not see them as children, as something to be protected. They are something to be feared, right? So then there's less revolt, there's less pushback when this baby gets gunned down if they're viewed as a man. Right. So, and I think the ripple effect is so damning. And on the same token, that dangerous trope of just strong Black woman has a huge ripple effect. Right. When you don't see us as vulnerable, as hurting, as in need of protection, we fight alone. Not because we want to, because we have to. Because if we stop swinging, what will happen to us when there's no one else out there with us?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. And that's a scary thought. Like, if we stop fighting, then what?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And in many ways, we know the answer to that. But the fact that it is not a clear-cut answer is even more scarier. Because that means that what would happen would be unfathomable.
Unfathomable.
What's up, Earwolf listeners? This is Jacquees Neal from Culture Kings. And I just want to let you know about a project that I am curating for Earwolf Presents called Black Voices Friday. Each week, I am going to present to you a different podcast hosted by some amazing Black voices and creators that you may not have heard about before. This is my chance to amplify Black voices and your chance to support them. So join me every Friday on Earwolf Presents to expand your ears and get to know some amazing Black voices. So you're a hip hop fan. You are in the hip hop community as far as, how would you signify your space in the hip hop game?
That's a really good question. I am, to my heart, just always forever a hip hop fan. And I love hip hop. Like, I love hip hop the way James Baldwin loves America. Like, it's mine. So I reserve the right to question it, to push it, and require it to do better. Right. And that's the way I love hip hop. Yes, I am a hip hop journalist. Yes, I write about it in a way where I challenge things, but it's mine. I want it to do better by us. I want it to be better. So I'm forever a hip hop fan. I am forever a hip hop fan. I'm just also I write about it, whether it's for the Huffington Post or the New York Times in my upcoming book. But at my core, I'm a hip hop head. I'm a fan.
Yeah. So one thing that and I'm not going to talk about this dude much, but one thing that I've always hated, you know, and I thought it was insane that some people, especially a lot of Black men, this was a thought in a lot of Black men, especially hip hop, that once we have daughters, then we get all the crap that we put women through, right? Jay-Z has barred it up. I feel probably a little more eloquently than Kanye West did, right? And some of his later tracks, and you know, we're not gonna talk much about. And I'm a brother from Chicago, so
yeah, we could not talk about Kanye right now.
Yeah, so but I've always hated that notion because it shouldn't take me getting punched in the face to know that it'll hurt. You know, right? I know it'll hurt. Mm-hmm. So why do you know it'll hurt? Because I'm a smart person who gets it, right? And it should be the same way with how the hip hop community and men in general, but how the hip hop community has treated women. It shouldn't mm-hmm. take you having a daughter to yeah. realize that some of your lyrics were damaging as hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see the industry going? Mainstream, I think, you know, I don't know where, if it happens in the indie game or the mainstream world, where do you see the industry going as far as the misogyny in hip hop and the rampant sexual abuse and assault in hip hop, and the conversation around it and the okayness with mm-hmm. it being just lyrics, right?
Yeah. That's a really good question. Hip hop is forever evolving, right? It's no longer that kid that was playing in the park after dark in the South Bronx, right? It's a big grown man that's more corporate now. It's forever evolving. And I want to believe that it's possible for it to evolve to be more, to be less misogynistic, to be less harmful for Black women, right? I want to believe that it's possible. If I stop believing that it's possible, I'll stop fighting, right? So I want to believe that it's totally possible. Do I see evidence that it's evolving in that direction? On some scales, yes. On some scales, we see more women having agency over their own bodies and pushing back against stereotypes and tropes. And when I say stereotypes, I mean like having agency over their own bodies, right? So it's no more we don't have just a Foxy Brown or a Little Kim, right? We have so right. much, so many more, right? So on one hand, we are growing, but it's slow and it's an uphill battle, right? And I think I'm thankful that we are having these conversations, but it's discouraging that we have, when I say we, I mean Black women, we have to continue to, it's almost like we're wounded soldiers. Like I have faith that it can evolve into something better. I just can't necessarily point to too many tangible things. One of the things that Kirina Mayo said to me, like one of, in our very early on conversations, she was like, you know, thank you for doing this work. And I'm sorry that you still have to, because she's been fighting this, you know, and doing this work decades before I started. So I want to believe that the work is going to get better for the next group of young Black feminist hip hop heads. I want to believe it's going to get better for them. It has to.
Yeah, it has to. If I can shift the conversation a little bit to, mm-hmm. We've had conversations on this pod about HBO Max. We think it's going to win the streaming wars as far as, you know, what people are going to get a lot of great content on it. And the show or the documentary that you are involved with on the record mm-hmm. is so needed because so many times, I mean, just in general, a lot of these stories get pushed down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking within our own community, right? You know, how long did people like Bill Cosby get away with shit?
Yeah.
R. Kelly and mm-hmm. all these. It shouldn't have taken the documentary 20 years after the fact for somebody right. like an R. Kelly. And in hip hop, because there's this incorrect notion that, you know, and you guys touch on this in the documentary, that that's just the price of admission. Like that was yeah. a very prominent line. That's the price of admission to be mm-hmm. a woman in hip hop, which is heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Very heartbreaking. For those who don't know, I talked about this in the intro, but On the Record, I'll say it again. On the Record is a documentary that is examining the sexual assault of Russell Simmons. And I would love for you to, I don't want to say it for you, to say what your involvement was in the documentary and why it is so important. I have my thoughts, but why is it so important that this documentary is made, watched, and shit, like, I hope something's going to come of it, right?
Yeah.
You know?
So my role in the documentary is I am one of the experts in the film and one of the talking heads, so to speak. And it's so much larger. I'm so thankful that you use the actual name, because people dismissively call it the Russell Simmons documentary. And it's not the Russell, quote unquote, just the Russell Simmons documentary, because it explores the intersection of race and sexual violence in America. Right. So my role in this film is to unpack that. to give historical context, to give context for what this means to be a Black woman in America. And when you're both the survivor and the victim are both Black, right? So, and you cannot have this conversation without talking about white supremacy. So this film is so important because, again, this conversation is needed, right? And I think I'm so glad that the Me Too movement is still has flames and it's still moving. But one of the things that this documentary does especially well is it does not let white supremacy off the hook. Because when you talk about why Black women like myself and like Drew and like the other woman in the film are so in love to hip hop, right? We just say, oh, it was our advocate. We say that term and it's kind of implied that people know that what is it fighting against? Advocating against what, right? It was our weapon that we use to fight back against white supremacy. So we're telling a story without taking white supremacy off the hook because you cannot have this conversation without it. So that's my role in the film, is to kind of help contextualize that and unpack it a bit more, which is also why it's so important for people to watch it, especially now because we are in a season where we are pushing for justice, we are pushing for accountability, right? We are talking about we're talking about justice with an intersectional lens. And that's what this documentary does especially well, is it talks about sexual violence with an intersectional lens. If I can I don't want to belabor this point, but it's certainly worth mentioning. There was this young activist. Her nickname was Toyin. I can't remember her last name right now, but she was on the front lines a few weeks ago, and she was fighting in the Black Lives Matter movement. She was protesting with her body. She was physically using her body to fight against white supremacy, to fight for George Floyd, to fight for Breonna, to fight for us. And in the same week, she tweeted about being sexually violated, and her offender was a Black man. And that tweet and her voice and her cry, it fell on deaf ears. And maybe a few days later, she was killed. We failed her. We failed a Black woman, right? We failed her because we didn't respond. We failed her because, sure, this strong Black, even though she's 19 years old, this strong Black woman can be out there fighting against police, getting pepper sprayed. And who needs to show up for her when she's talking about housing insecurity and sexual violence? Who needs to show up for her? If people don't even show up for us to check rappers that are like kikiing about, you know, how we are not exotic or not desirable and we're so angry, how can we, are they even going to show up for a Tosin? Because they're so strong, because we don't need that, right? So this documentary is so critical because we need conversations like that. Not so we don't, because I don't want another Drew. I don't want another Toyin. I want another Black woman's body to just be just disregarded in any capacity.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. And you know, it was so funny after the George Floyd deaths, not to get off topic of the documentary, but after the George Floyd deaths and, you know, the uprising started to happen, and myself included, one of the things that I was saying a lot to my white friends and fans of the show is, look, like, Black people are out here fighting, but we also tired of fighting. Like, stop asking us what you can do, or stop expecting us to have the tools to dismantle the system that you built, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I put that on myself, because the same could be said as a Black man.
Yes.
For Black women.
I was really hoping you made that connection, brother.
Yeah. And because, all right, maybe as a Black man and for the Black race, if I don't feel like fighting today, sure. But as a Black man, for our Black women, our Black trans women, you know, all the people who are, and I don't know if this is a right phrase to use, but on the lower part of the totem pole, I can fight more, and I should be fighting more.
I wouldn't even say more marginalized in our communities. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you know, and one thing that bothers me so much, and you spoke to this, is how we lack intersectionality in a lot of these causes, right? We see it a lot with white toward Black, white feminism toward Black feminism, right? Which, you know, I'm a man, so I can't speak too much to that. But we see it a lot, but it's in our community too. Yeah. The intersectionality, like you keep bringing, and honestly, this is some of the first times I've really, like, this documentary and you saying it, the intersectionality with Black women of race and sex, and sexism. Gosh, why is that something that is not just like a second nature phrase to hear?
Shout out to Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, right? She coined the term intersectionality, and it's a justice that's not intersectional is not justice at all, right? So even right now, one of the things, it was so interesting because this documentary dropped and then we saw like the uprisings and people were saying, like, kind of on Twitter, like, not right now, you know, not right now, Black women, we're talking about police violence. Not right now, Black women, we're talking about ways white supremacy is killing or, you know, is harming our community, as if these things are separate from us, right? There's a reason why. If, and it's just not just opinion, these are stats. If you look at the cases in terms of like rape cases that are prosecuted, when a survivor is a Black woman, you're least likely to get prosecuted. And we're talking about provided a Black woman feels safe enough to call the police if she, you know, when she is raped, because who's to say they won't further harm her? And then there's still this piece of us where we innately just want to protect Black men. Who's to say they still won't harm the offender? So white supremacy is the reason why we are less protected when Black women are raped. So to have this conversation and not treat them or even see it as though they are interconnected is part of the problem in itself. There cannot be anymore, not right now. It has to be yes now. Yes, all of it at the same time.
Yeah. If not now, then when? Mm-hmm. Within the documentary, there, you know, which is a sad thing, and we've seen this a lot with Russell Simmons in particular, or specifically toward this documentary, I should say, how men in power, men in general, but men in power especially get away with so much.
Mm-hmm.
And they're believed.
And they're believed unquestionably.
Unquestionably.
And sometimes I don't even know if they, because one of the, I read an article about, and this, I thought it was such an unfair criticism about the review of the film. And the writer said, why didn't they have more men speaking out? If Drew helped all of these people in her field as an A&R, why weren't their voices, you know, in a film? Why weren't there more of them speaking out? And it wasn't, and it was really a criticism. You know, she really phrased it, the writer really phrased it as a criticism. What I thought was so unfair, because that's part of the problem, is that all of these men are not speaking out. And now you want to say, is he believed unequivocally, or is it just because he helped make so many people in our community wealthy or rich, right? So they're just not speaking back, speaking up for just a multitude of reasons. So yes, power works as a great silencer, you know, and when we're talking about sexual violence against women. I wrote about this probably a gazillion times when talking about R. Kelly and why it's important to divest from R. Kelly. It's not about, oh, I can separate the music from the man. Let me tell you what you're doing when you're supporting him. You are putting money in his pocket, money that he is then able to use to silence his victims, and in terms of powerful lawyers. Like, there's a multitude of ways where you can just, like, Google is free, right? You can really look into that case and see the ways that he used money and resources to silence these survivors, right? So there is something about, you know, the power that these men have to further silence them. And again, just thinking back to the Breakfast Club interview, it takes a lot of power to just, like, you know, it's very hard. The average Joe Blow can't pick up the phone and say, I want to go to the Breakfast Club. And regardless of what you think about the Breakfast Club, it's still a place with presidential candidates theme that it's worthy enough to stop by there. It's still a massive audience. So he was able to leverage his, he still has power, despite the fact that he's been pretty removed from the hip hop industry for a really long time. He still has enough power to go on our show unchecked or, you know, uninterrupted with no pushback. So when you're talking about power, his power is buying him, it allows him a massive platform to say whatever he wants to say. It allows him this type of access that the survivors don't always get. Yes, they push back and they were able later to go on a show, but they still don't have that mega microphone. So that's what it is. That's what that power allows. This type of power, not just with the Russell Simmons, but this is the reason why it can go so pervasive invasive. Like, sexual predators don't live in a bubble. You need a squad, right? You need a squad of enablers to protect you, to muffle it. That's what power affords you.
Yeah. I want to make 2 points because I would love to hear your thought process on this specific matter. One part that I used to struggle with, and you can speak to this as a Black person as well, is how we feel like a lot of our heroes get taken away from us, right? Not to bring this name up again, but somebody like a Bill Cosby, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's no question what he's done for the Black community and entertainment and you know, and other fields as well. Like, nobody can question some of that, right? But then there's also no question that he's a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
A brutal rapist, you know, and then the struggle that some people have, and I will say men have, is making that connection or disconnecting, like, how important he was for the movement toward now how we have to dismiss him because of his actions, right? And the conclusion that I came with, and this will lead me to my second point, is we need to champion more Black women. There's no reason that the reason Bill Cosby was able to, and I'm not taking anything away from the work that he's done or the brain that he has, but the reason Bill Cosby was able to be in that position is because before Black women got there, Black men got there first, as far as,
mm-hmm.
oh, we'll listen to you. We'll listen to some of y'all. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And we need more Black heroes. We need more Black women heroes. Which leads me to my second point. You said something about Russell Simmons going on unchecked. And the thing that pisses me off about that is the reason he's unchecked is because a lot of people in our community and just a lot of people in general won't even hear about the story. The first time they'll hear about that story is when Russell Simmons comes to talk about it with his mm-hmm. point of view, right?
Mm-hmm.
So not only do we need more Black women as heroes and leaders that we can look to and, like, allow them to make the same, if not better, changes that somebody with the legacy of Bill Cosby did, we also need to let those voices lead and be the front. So, like, Russell Simmons isn't the first time I'm hearing about this story, you know, because for those who aren't going to go and do the extra work, if Russell Simmons is the first time I'm hearing about this story, well, I've heard the story,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's a problem. Like, that's a problem. So I would love to just hear, like, I don't even know what I want to hear. But
let's unpack what you said, because you said a lot. So let's kind of unpack.
I did.
This.
I said a lot.
So no, which is wonderful. So let's start with, I used to use the phrase, well, one, we're talking about Cosby, right? And I graduated from an HBCU, and I only knew an HBCU was possible because this little girl from the housing projects in Yonkers, New York, grew up watching A Different World. I am the first person in my family to ever attend college from my mother's side and my father's side. I didn't even know this thing was, what do you mean this thing called HBCU, right, is a real thing. That literally planted a seed in my head that changed my life trajectory. But multiple things can be true at the same time. While this man, his, like you said, the things that he contributed to our culture is literally undeniable. So his harm is just as undeniable, right? So what's going to happen here is what's happening. And I used to be a therapist for 6 years in another life, right? So what's happening here is people are experiencing what's called, like, cognitive dissonance. This, what do we do with this? What do we do with this man who we grew up revering him, somewhat rightfully so, because his work literally changed the life trajectory of myself and my daughter. We're talking about generations of people that's changed, right? And we grew up him being quote unquote America's dad. Now we're presenting with a side of him that we didn't know exists. So cognitive dissonance is that feeling of uncomfortability, like you don't know what to do with that or how to make sense of that. So sometimes people shy away from it. It doesn't feel good. So one of the things people tend to do is, I want to not believe it, right? That can't be true about Cosby, or B, I don't necessarily want to hear it, right? Then one of the things that people do is,
they want to extend grace. They want to offer him like an olive branch. They want him, sometimes they're like, well, this was a long time ago, right? They tell themselves so many different things. And the same thing with Russell Simmons. It's almost like you want to extend them restoration because you don't know how to make sense of that cognitive dissonance. So you want restoration for him, right? And I believe as a also as a criminal justice professor, I believe in a restorative justice model, right? I believe there's a process of restoration. But for those who are struggling with cognitive dissonance, whether it's yourself, whether it's those listening, you have to understand before you are tempted to offer a path to restoration, know that that's not yours to offer. Before there can be restoration, it has to be some form of accountability. Yeah. And accountability looking like I was wrong. What can I do to restore this harm? And it is for the recipients of that harm to figure out if restoration is possible. So while you are wrestling with this, I don't know what to do with this, and people are tempted to offer some type of restoration for a Cosby or a Russell Simmons, know that that's not yours to offer. You were not the person directly harmed by that. And I think, what else did you say? Because like I said, you said a lot. Like,
I did say a lot.
And And I used to say, we have no heroes to spare, right? So it was really hard to like, what do you want us to just throw this Russell away? Like Russell was, you know, he's dope in the hip hop game. You know, he did A, B, C, and D. We have no heroes to spare. I don't know that I would like to change that language to say, let's pull our resources in behind other heroes, right? There's a tendency because we want leadership in our community, right? Let's redefine what that leadership can look like. Does that leadership necessarily have to be a cisgender male, right? Heterosexual male? What would happen if we threw our resources and our support around a woman, a black woman with the same capabilities as a Russell or as a Bill Cosby, who just was doing all this amazing stuff without being out here raping people? What will happen if we change our mind, our thinking about what leadership could look like in our community? Yeah. Right. So I think we will be having less of these conversations in terms of, but we have such few heroes. No. You choose to support such few heroes because there's some dope ass black women out here doing a thing. You just choose to not throw your resources, support, and trust around her.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And then as far as, I love that. And that is so true. We the whole we have few heroes is almost a cop out in many ways, because there's something that I say often. If you're looking for A, you'll find B. Right. Mm-hmm. So change what you're looking for. Right.
Yeah.
Look for more non straight black men heroes in our community. Look for less and look for more black women, black trans lives, black like these communities that are so marginalized but are doing just as much work.
Yes.
And are just as heroic and are just as intelligent and smart. And these are things that you shouldn't have to say. But all the qualities that we love in our quote unquote heroes, they're not special. Like, they're not special.
Thinking about the documentary, what would have happened if Drew would have been as protected as Russell?
Right.
Russell had layers and layers. Where would she be? Where would a Salai be? Where would a Sherry be if that had that layer of protection? You know, and I think Kiernan said in the documentary, what did we lose because we chose to not give her that type of protection?
Yep. Yeah. You're right. What did we lose? Like, what could we be talking about right now?
What could we be talking about? Who would these women be?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely want to talk about your book just a little bit, but before we get there, as far as On the Record goes, first of all, if you haven't seen it, and I'm going to talk to a lot of y'all as well. I know some of y'all have just scrolled on past it too, in the HBO stream. So let me talk to you. Don't skip it. Don't skip it. You ain't got shit else to do. and one thing that I'm, you know, listen, COVID has been rough. It's taken a lot of lives. It's disproportionately taken a lot of our lives. But if I can take a little glimmer of hope from it, is that it has allowed, or not allowed, has forced a lot of people to slow down.
Yeah.
And it's removed the excuses that a lot of people have had for, you know, some of the work that we've had to do in the community and internally. So you don't have much else to do right now during quarantine. You can spare a couple of hours and watch this. What is your hope that the takeaway from this documentary is, or the lane or the path that it's going to start to put us on outside of justice? Okay. Like, because that's, I hope that is what everybody wants, is the actual justice.
I actually want to rewind. You asked me a really good question. You asked me, like, do I see change or progress within hip hop? Mm-hmm. Sometimes change is happening so slowly, it's easy to miss some larger things that are happening. Just the fact that we are having this conversation on this large platform with a Black man who's holding himself accountable. Just the fact that this documentary exists on the scale that it does is progress and change. And to answer your question, what do I hope a takeaway is? I want to see more Black men on the front lines having these conversations with other Black men, right? Because to go back to your example about, you know, I hate the term allies, right? But let's just say, for lack of allies, I prefer co-conspirators, right? But let's just say, so white people in your circle that was saying, oh my gosh, what can we do? This is so exhausting. And you kind of kept having to have that conversation with them over and over. And you saying like, hell damn, fight. Like whatever you said to them. Like my conversation to them is, you don't have to jump in my DMs and unpack systemic racism to me to show me that you get it. I get it, sis. I've been living this. I know this. Can you please go home and tell your cousin Becky that? Yes. Like on Thanksgiving when the shit gets tough? Like I don't want, as much as I appreciate not having to do a lot of intellectual labor on this conversation, but it's more helpful for me if you have this conversation with, you know, your homies on the block, or, you know, when it's just wherever you are with gathering of Black men. So I'm hoping this documentary opens up more of those conversations, but not just with Black women. Like I said, we've been out here swinging and doing it because we have to, not because we're so strong. We just recognize ain't nobody else swinging with us. So I'm hoping that y'all will start swinging with us and for us, even when we're not around.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something that I can do. That is something that we all can do. And I hope that we take this time and we do it, and not just for, you know, a fortnight, not just, you know, while it's popular, not while, you know, not just when you can get, you know, a couple thousand likes and retweets and, you know, let's not be performative with this.
Yes.
Right. And here's the part too. This ain't new information.
Sure,
this is information that our community and our Black women have been yelling at us for decades, for years, for a long, even in this specific generation that we are, the social media generation. This isn't the first, second, 10th, 100th, 500th time we've had this conversation. We've had it over and over and over, right?
Like, so I said, eventually, I'm so thankful for a Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw that gave us this language of intersectionality. But like Fannie Lou Hamer was saying this in the civil rights movement. Like she's been, people, you know, been out here talking about intersectionality without necessarily using that phrase, right? We have, like, this is not nothing new under the sun. Another thing I want to see people do from this documentary is dig into the work of these women. Like, they are all, I mean, not even talking about just myself, right? But everyone was selected to be an expert on this film. Dig into the work of this woman. Like, read everything that Dr. Joan Morgan writes, right? Dig into who Karen Amaya is. Dig into Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. You know, you could feel free to pick up my book in March when it comes out. Like, really, don't allow this to be the end or be all. It's just like what I would tell white people, don't be like, oh my gosh, racism exists. Let me watch the 13th. Ow, I'm done. No, this is a beginning. Get busy. Allow us to light your flame and keep doing that work. Google bell hooks. Like, you know, jump in. Let me see you get some bell hooks in your system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very smooth transition here. You brought up your work and your book that's coming out next March 2021, which is congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
Is it on track to still come out at that time? Because I know COVID pushed back. Okay, great.
I still on track.
Miseducation, A Women's Guide to Hip Hop is the name of the book. talk to us about it. Yeah.
One of these days I'm gonna work up like an elevated spiel, but like in another life, since we've just been talking a lot, honest, in another life I'd be like, I'll be a rapper. Like, so I always joke, like, you know, this is my mixtape, because what I do is I use hip hop as a lens to deconstruct a lot of social issues, but it's a collection of essays that is part memoir and part sociology, and I'm deconstructing hip hop lyrics, but it's comprised, but it's put together like a mixtape. Like, there's a side A of the chapter and there's a side B. And you know, if you remember old school, like when you got an actual tape, for those who don't know what the hell that is. The A side was the more popular narrative, the one that the DJ played all the time. And the B side, maybe you flipped the tape over when you got a little bit sick of it, but you know, maybe it was the B, or it was just less popular. So the A side of my chapter, I am deconstructing a larger narrative. Like, for example, there's one chapter called One Love, and the A side of that is I am deconstructing the larger narrative of mass incarceration in our community. And then I'm using the lyrics, using personal narrative. And then the B side of it is I push Nas a bit, because very much like that song, women are treated like, in the conversation of mass incarceration, we are treated like afterthoughts, jump off. Like, we only mention in relation to who we are as men. And that's exactly what Nas did in that song. And that's exactly what happens in the larger conversation around mass incarceration. So it is a loving critique of hip hop as I deconstruct these social issues from the lens and perspective of a Black woman.
Love it. I'm very excited for this to come out. And because one, there are a lot of, I don't say a lot, but there's a good amount of books on hip hop. But a lot of times, and we've talked about this numerous times right now, a lot of times the first names that you think to go check out their hip hop book are men in hip hop, right? Which is another reason why they often get the first line of to say what they have to say.
Yeah. And,
which sucks. But I love that concept. The A and B side. I think that's dope. For those of y'all who, because I know we got some young little, you know, some young little people listening to the pod. You know, back, but when you didn't have, when you had to wait for a song to come on if you wanted to record it on your cassette, you know what I'm saying? That is such a novel idea that is, I'm trying to go through my banks. I don't think anybody's ever explored to release art in today's society from that standpoint. So that's so dope. I think that's so fucking dope.
You gotta have me back on the show when a book actually drops.
Matt, definitely write that down so we can make a note of that, because I would love to have you back on to actually like dig into that book and dig into a copy. Oh, hell yes. I am very thankful for you coming on. You know, listen, I want to say that I personally don't think I am special for navigating this interview or anything like that, because in many ways, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm not trying to, you know, I think the conversations are what need to be had, right?
Yes.
And for a lot of people, you know, I've been saying this to all my white fans and friends and all the white folk. Nobody is expecting you to have all the answers, right? People are expecting you to know when you don't, though.
Yeah.
And there's this one little meme that's been going out recently, is normalize getting new information and changing your opinion.
Yes.
That is so important.
A great way to start. That's a great place to start.
You know, and so I want to thank you for even giving me some things. I was like, damn, you're right. You know, that is a good place to turn my opinion of what I thought and things like that. So before we jump off, I want to give you the space and the platform to let anybody know about anything else you may want them to know about, where they may want to find you if you want to be found. I want to give you that space to let people know where they can acquire the dopeness of yourself.
My book, Miseducation, A Woman's Guide to Hip Hop, comes out in March 2021. And I'll be back on the show so we can talk about it a bit more.
I'm being very strategic and I'm writing less, you know, articles, because I would say, oh, normally I would have like articles coming out from different publications, but I'm trying to scale back and focus on my book. So you can stay in contact with me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter. Sometimes I tweet about, you know, super dope shit. Sometimes I'm just tweeting about, you know, my sex life or lack thereof. Or, you know, sometimes I'm talking about systemic racism. But you can still follow me.
Love it. I love it. Go follow her. Please go watch On the Record when the book drops next March, which, you know, at this point, this year is moving slow and fast at the same time. May feel like tomorrow or may feel like a decade from now, but make sure to write it down in your calendar. We'll definitely have you back on as the book is about to drop to re-remind the kingdom to check it out and definitely put it on a list to pre-order and get and read. And we'll definitely have you back on to talk about. Shanita, thank you so much for jumping on. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was a really great interview. It just felt like a good conversation. So this was dope.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
In a world with civil unrest and a global pandemic, there's only one person who can provide the insight and perspective we need.
Doop-a-doop-boop-boop. It's me, Samantha Bee.
I know what you're thinking. Doesn't she already have a podcast? But no, you're thinking of everyone else. Each week on my new podcast, Full Release, I'll talk to interesting, smart people like Soledad O'Brien and Jelani Cobb. Please subscribe and join me every week.
Full Release with Samantha Bee. All new Tuesdays, streaming on your favorite podcast platform.
There it is, everybody. I'm going to be real with you. I was a little nervous to jump into that interview beforehand, solely for the reason that I don't know why. I don't know why, because it's a conversation that needs to be had. But one thing that I try to pride myself on, and I think that's important, is having the conversations in the right way. And allowing the person that you're having these conversations with, when it centers around race and centers around women and Black women in general, making sure that they have the platform and the space to say the things that they need to say, want to say, and also push back on some of the things that you say as well. And I'm so grateful that Shanita came on and not only dropped some amazing knowledge, but gave you or gave us and gave me such a really dope place to know that if you haven't started, you can start here. And if you have started, where's the next place you can go? And I want to be very clear when I say this. Shanita is just one person, right? And I say that to say this. Please don't let just one person be your only guide into how we can uplift our Black women or uplift, cut our Black women out, please. How we can uplift Black women. Because one, we've said this many times on this show, Black people are not a monolith. Black women are not a monolith. And you know, one Black woman doesn't have all the answers, nor should we expect them to have all the answers, right? That's kind of what we were talking about. Have these conversations. Google is free and you can't exhaust Google, but and go look at some of these other amazing women who have been having these conversations for years and decades, who have different ways and different life experiences where they can navigate you in this conversation that we need to have and in this education that we need to have, right? Shanita is one vessel, a great vessel, but she's one vessel. We can have multiple vessels in our lives as we are trying to learn and uplift the voices that are marginalized, who no longer deserve or should be marginalized, right? So shout out to Shanita. I think she was dope. I hope you guys got a lot from it. Please go watch On the Record. When her book comes out, we're going to have her back on. I'm very excited about that. I mean, listen, no bullshit. That idea with the A and the B side of the book is so dope. It's such a really smart, as a creative person myself, that got me excited because it's such a really cool idea. So I'm very excited for that to come out and hit the world. And definitely follow her as well. She's dope. The work she's doing is dope. It's important. And I hope that people take it seriously and push that work forward. So when her daughter grows up, she doesn't have to do the same damn work her mother is doing, that she had to do, that her mother was doing, and many generations before her were doing, right? We need to be better within our Black community. We need to be better as a people in general. Same with the white folks. You know, people who listen to Culture Kings, this is two Black men, right? It's two Black men y'all love on this show. So, you know, if this is one of your favorite podcasts, thank you so much. But go find some other podcasts with Black women talking about pop culture. You know, they're out there. With that said, right now, I'm doing Black Voices Friday on Earwolf. I generally don't love to promote other things that I do on this podcast, but I think this one is important because it kind of speaks to this a little bit. Black Voices Friday, where I am curating other podcasts who don't have the platform that Culture Kings or Scam Goddess or some of The Read or some of your other favorite Black shows have. And I'm introducing them to you on Earwolf Presents. So that's every Friday, as of now, up through the end of August. So go check it out, support Black art, go find some new shows. That's a really good opportunity to do that. I'm very, very excited to be curating that and have that out in the world. So that is one thing. Also, The Kingdom bonus content, Stitcher Premium. It is out. It is live. It is popping. Use the promo code KINGS to get a free month. Listen, when you do that, y'all always talking about, man, Kings, how can we help y'all? Y'all can help us. Because, niggas, we gonna get paid if y'all use that. So use that free code and help your Kings out. And also just listen to some of our content because, you know, we're doing some fun shit over there. So check that out. Let's get to Queen of the Week. Let's do this week's Queen of the Week. This week's Queen of the Week is a somber Queen of the Week. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about the unfortunate and very tragic death of Naya Rivera, star of Glee. I remember Naya even from like a few episodes of Family Matters growing up. And yeah, she had been doing it for a long ass time. But, you know, she was more known for Glee and some of her more recent work and her music. This one was very a painful way to find out somebody passed away because it involved their kid being there. And, you know, it's just a really sad thing. So I want to give a special Queen of the Week to Naya Rivera, her memory, her life. May she rest in all the paradise. And sending love to her baby boy who was with her when she drowned, unfortunately. Which, you know, I'm sure that's unfortunately going to stick with him for the rest of his life. So, yeah, very, very sad Queen of the Week. So, and in the spirit of this episode, I also want to just say to all the Black women, to all the women of color that we have lost, especially in this fight right now that we're fighting against assault, whether it is from domestic or police brutality. You know, lift up their names. Don't forget them. Don't forget their memories. We have a lot of fighting to do for all of the queens out there whose lives are cut short, so we can hopefully make sure when it comes to violence, that their lives are not cut short and that they are protected. So somber queen of the week, important queen of the week, Naya Rivera, and a reminder to everyone out there to keep the fight going for all these queens so we can stop having stories where we find out another one has passed away due to violence and everything that we can avoid. That's it. That's the episode. To everybody, I know, you know, it wasn't a lot of chuckles and laughs up in here, but so damn what? All right. It's called Culture Kings, and we hit every intersection of the culture. And if that means y'all don't hee hee ha ha for an episode, then y'all don't hee hee ha ha for an episode. You know what I'm saying? But I appreciate y'all. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I hope you guys consume it and it was a good one for you. Edgar will be back. And if I'm not back, I'll be back. We still doing this damn thing together. At Culture Kings Pod is where you can find the podcast. Interact with us. Talk to us, niggas. We want to hear from you. Hit us up on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Leave us a review. I think we should do an episode where we actually talk about some of the reviews and you know, thank y'all for all the support because we really do appreciate it. You can find me on every piece of social media at Jacques Neal. You can find Edgar on Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir, on Instagram at AwfulGram. Don't find Matt. You won't like his social media. It is problematic. And I will say this, though. Matt was very happy to have Shanita on. It's the only guest that we've had that Matt was like, I love this guest. So for this episode, you can give Matt kudos and adoration. But when we come back, you best believe Matt gonna be back to his old ways. And until that, we like you, we love you. Peace out.